Our Bible reading today is taken from the book of Mark, chapter 6, verse 30 to 44. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time, it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, "That would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, "Five and two fish." Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties, taking the five loaves and the two fish, and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the two fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up the 12 baskets of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000. The word of the Lord.
Hope all of you got some of that this summer. It's so nice. So this week, I read an article by an author named David Zoll, and he was talking about the problem of Performancism. Have you heard this word? Performancism is a mindset that equates our identity and our value directly with our performance. You are what you do. This is performancism. David Zoll has written in the past that in the absence of a clear understanding of our merit being based solely on who God says we are, in the absence of that understanding, we look to other things to increase our feelings of being worthy. And in fact, he says today, busyness has become the badge of honor, a sign of how important or worthy we are. Our calendar being full has become a way to prove our worth. We are busy, so we are worthy. He says in one of his books, if the protagonists in Jane Austen novels gloried in their idleness, their distance from the harried lower echelons of society who have no choice but to work, a couple of centuries later, the opposite holds sway. Keeping up with the Joneses now means trying to outschedule them. Zoll says that in our lives, that looks like working 80 or more hours a week, climbing the ladder or moving ahead in our career at an appropriate pace, achieving more and more, because we are what we achieve. And we pass this on to our kids. They are what they do. So we push our kids to get good grades, to stay busy with a sport or some other extracurricular, to display above average intelligence in their reading or their creativity or their wittiness. They are what they do, so they better do a lot and excellently. And since they're our kids, their performance says something about our worthiness because we are what we do and our kids are our work. Now, Performancism isn't necessarily new, right? In Jesus' day, it was just as tempting to derive worth from performance. That's why Martha complained about Mary sitting at Jesus' feet instead of helping with the chores. Martha thought the right thing was to keep busy, get stuff done, and Mary was failing to do that. And Jesus' disciples were just as susceptible to the pull of performancism. That's why Peter kept pulling Jesus aside, trying to manage his messianic mission. Okay, Jesus, don't say things like that because we want people to believe you're the Messiah. So if you're going to do that, we got to have you act this way, do this stuff. Peter wanted Jesus to perform well as Messiah. And so he had some ideas about how Jesus could improve his performance. And in Mark 6, the disciples had an experience where they were likely to be drawn into the deceptive mindset of performancism. See, earlier in Mark 6, before this feeding of the 5,000, in Mark 6, verses 6 through 13, Jesus sent out the 12 to do ministry. He sent them out in pairs to go heal people, cast out spirits, preach. And it sounds like they had a pretty successful outing. They did it. In verse 13, it says they drove out many demons and anointed many sick people and healed them. So where our passage picked up today at verse 30, they could not wait to tell Jesus everything they had done. The apostles, it says, gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. And after this comes the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000 people. He teaches them all day, and then it was late and the people needed food. And verses 35 and following say, by this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. This is a remote place, they said, and it's already very late. Send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. It's late, Jesus. They need food. There's a lot of them. Send them away. But Jesus had other plans. He has a different idea. In verse 37, it says, but he answered, you give them something to eat. And right here is where I think Jesus was helping his disciples see the problem of performancism. See, the disciples had just come off this moment of ministry success. From all accounts, their outing to heal and cast out demons and preach has been incredibly successful. And I wonder if Jesus knew that this moment of ministry success, of excellent performance, could create a problem for them. I wonder if Jesus knew that just like the rest of us, when the disciples had a taste of success, if they maybe had started to believe the lie that they were worthy to be Jesus' disciples because of what they had done. They had cast out demons. They'd healed people. This must be why Jesus had called them to be his disciples. And I wonder if Jesus knew exactly where this kind of thinking leads. Performancism. You are what you achieve. And Jesus knew that there would be times when healing didn't come. There would be times later in the gospel where evil spirits wouldn't leave. He knew there would be times after his return to heaven where as hard as they tried, they couldn't make something happen. And this is where the problem of performancism comes into sharp relief. If we are what we achieve, then whether we achieve or don't achieve, we can never rest. If we do achieve for a while, then we have to keep achieving or we won't be worthy anymore. If we aren't achieving, we feel like a failure. This is what David Zoll wrote about in that article I referenced. He says performancism is bad for everyone, not only the people who can't keep up with this relentless drive to achieve. He says, of course, performancism is bad for people who can't excel, like a student who gets C's and D's. They feel like a failure because they're not the best. And performancism says you have to be the best, you have to achieve. But performancism is also bad for the student who gets straight A's. It's bad for the student who gets straight A's because they have to keep working to stay on top. They are constantly worried about maintaining their identity as a good student who gets straight A's. And performancism, of course, is bad for somebody who maybe can't work because of an injury, right? In a country where we are obsessed with work, that person feels like a failure because they can't do what seems to be the most important indicator of a person's worth here in our country. But it's also bad for the CEO who works 100 hours a week to keep performing so she isn't replaced, who has the ever-present anxiety of continuing to perform because she knows that a quarter or two of decreased returns might mean being fired. Performancism. It's bad for the single mom who can't enroll her kids in all the same activities and opportunities that their friends might be in. But it's also bad for the parent with plenty of resources who obsesses over making sure their child has every opportunity in academics and sports and in every other arena. Performancism is bad for everybody. Have you ever felt the weight of performancism? I have. Honestly, I feel that weight all the time. I worry if my kids aren't the smartest kids in their class, if they're not keeping up. I worry I'm not doing a good enough job keeping our house clean. Honestly, I struggle with performancism as a pastor. If attendance and giving and baptisms, if those aren't all increasing, what does that mean about me? Am I not enough? And if they are increasing, what do I have to do to keep them increasing? And this is the problem of performancism. It's exhausting. Because performancism requires us to control what is ultimately outside of our control. I cannot control how my kids do in school. I can't. What they're good at, what's a struggle for them, that's outside my control. I cannot possibly keep my house looking like it belongs in Good Housekeeping magazine. I have other things to do. And it is not ultimately up to me what happens here at Harbor of Hope. I can't control whether or not people come and worship together on Sundays. I can't control what happens in people's hearts as they follow Jesus. I can't make someone respond to the good news of Jesus' love for them. I can't. It is outside of my control. But performancism lies to me. It tells me it is up to me, that I do have to make things happen. And if I listen to performancism's lies, I will run myself ragged, chasing what I can never accomplish. In fact, that's probably a pretty good sign of whether or not we're believing the lies of performancism. Are you exhausted? Does your work bring you more anxiety than enjoyment and peace? When you think about your family, your job, your health, your overall life, do you feel anxious or do you feel peace? Anxiety and unceasing activity are signs that performancism might have a grip on your heart. The response of the disciples in Matthew 6, verse 37 tells me they were confused. They were confused about who actually empowered and accomplished the ministry success they had just experienced. They said to him, "That would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" See, when Jesus suggested that the disciples provide the people with food, I think he was giving them an opportunity. He was giving them an opportunity to face the ways performancism had snuck into their hearts. He let them come face to face with the reality of their inadequacy, face to face with the huge problem of performancism. Performancism lies because we cannot do it all. But there's good news. Jesus doesn't ask us to do it all. In the next verses of Mark chapter 6, Jesus teaches his disciples an incredibly important lesson. Their inadequacy is not a problem for him. Their human limitations don't limit Jesus. "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, "Five and two fish." Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of men who had eaten was 5,000. This is a well-known miracle story of Jesus, right? It displays the power of Jesus. It enhances our belief that he is, in fact, the Son of God. Obviously, the 5,000 men and their families who were provided for must have been amazed at Jesus. But I think this miracle was for more than just those people who were hungry. I think this miracle was for the 12 disciples, too. They came face to face with their limitations. And then Jesus reminded them that he is not limited in the same way they are. He wanted them to learn early on that their moments of apparent success or failure had nothing to do with why he called them to be his disciples. They didn't need to make anything happen. His power is enough. And to drive this home, he had the disciples pick up the leftover food. 12 baskets of broken pieces of fish and bread were left over. 12. One for each disciple. They each picked up an entire basket of leftovers from 5 loaves and 2 fish that fed thousands of people. What an important experience for each of those disciples to have. Harbert, Jesus isn't asking you to do it all. Jesus says that you matter not because of what you accomplish, but because you are his. Jesus never intended you to have to endlessly perform to feel worthy. You are worthy because you are made in the image of God. You are worthy because of the price Jesus paid for you. That is the story of the gospel, that God so loved the world that he sent his son, Jesus, to die for every single one of us. You are worthy because you are loved by God. And nothing else you ever fail to do or do will ever make you more or less worthy of his love. And that's the place Jesus wants us to live in, a settled place, resting in his love for us. At the beginning of this passage that we read this morning, as the disciples are telling Jesus all about what they've done, Jesus invites them to go someplace quiet and rest. Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. That's what Jesus wants for them. And when they didn't get that rest immediately because the people followed, Jesus didn't give up on getting them some rest. Immediately following the miracle of feeding thousands of people, Jesus again persistently invites them to rest. Immediately, it says, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. He says, I'll send the crowd home. You go rest. Jesus wants rest for his followers, not just unending productivity. Jesus rests. After this, he went to pray and be quiet alone with God as well. We were made for rest. God rested on the 7th day of creation. We are made in his image, so we are made to rest. This is why the first thing God told the people of Israel after they came out of Egypt in the book of Exodus was that they were to observe a day of rest every week. In the Bible, the word rest is mentioned about 500 times. And in Matthew 11, Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Rest matters. And we can only rest when we know that we are loved. Not because of what we produce, but simply because of who we are. And who we are is beloved children of God. And here, in that place of rest, in this place where we trade our need to perform for God's unending love and approval for us, this is where Jesus wants us to dwell. This is where he wants us to live. And we see in this story the difference that living in a place of rest makes. When faced with the need to feed all these people, Jesus had a different reaction than his disciples. The disciples freaked out. They got anxious. They started imagining worst case scenarios. There goes all our money. We can't do this. But did you notice how Jesus responded to people when he saw their neediness? Verse 34 says, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them. He had compassion on them, for they were like sheep without a shepherd. He had compassion. Compassion isn't something we can force. It's not something we muster up. Compassion is a gut reaction when we're faced with the needs of others. When faced with the needs of the crowd, the disciples panicked, and Jesus had compassion. Jesus was able to have compassion because he wasn't starting from a place of scarcity. He knew he had everything those people needed. He wasn't panicked by their needs. But the disciples saw only their inadequacy to meet the needs of the people, and so they panicked. When we live out of a place of rest in God and who he is and who we are in him, then we are able to work from a place of peace instead of panic. When we live out of a place of rest in God who loves us, we have what we need to love others. We have what we need to accomplish whatever it is God asks of us in a day. So Harbor, I want to ask you, as we head into fall, into another season of busyness, are you living from a place of performancism? Or are you living from a place of peace, knowing that you are loved? Are there indicators, maybe, that you are tying your worth to your ability to produce? Do you feel like you have to just keep anxiously striving all the time, at work or home or in relationships? Do you feel like enough is never enough? There's not enough. I want to just ask you to consider, where is it you are actually deriving your sense of worth from? Is it from what you do at your job, with your kids, in your home? Or is your sense of worth grounded in the reality of who you are in Christ? I want to ask you to consider your life. Are there any areas of your life where you are buying into the lies of performancism that are so prevalent in our world? Are you worried about the success of your children? Are you obsessing over your career? This morning, just like we did last week if you were here, we're going to take some intentional time to just hear from God. I'll ask some questions, and then we'll just sit together in silence to see what God says in each of our hearts. If this is a new practice for you, by the way, I'll just share that I've learned to hear from God. The way I've learned to do that is to trust that when I, in silence, ask God a question and just wait, that quiet thought that enters my mind just might be the Lord speaking to me, right? The Lord's voice is a voice of love and peace. The Lord's voice is not a voice of shaming or judging. So when you ask a question and a quiet thought enters your mind, let me just submit to you that that might be what God is trying to say to you. That's how I've learned to listen for God. So we're going to take a moment now, take a few deep breaths, take time to settle yourself in your chair, get comfortable, and then I'll take you through about three questions where we're going to ask God and just wait and see what he says in our hearts. So take a moment now, take a few deep breaths, and just get comfortable in your chair. Now, knowing that you are loved fully by God, ask God to show you any area in your life where you have bought the lies of performancism, that you are what you produce. In these next quiet moments, ask him to show you where you are anxiously striving instead of resting in his love for you. Now that maybe he's brought an area or two to mind, let's take a moment to ask God to remind us who we are in him. Ask him to bring to mind maybe a Bible verse or a phrase that reminds you the truth of who you are in him, that you are loved, you are his child, you are forgiven, you are wanted, you are welcome. Just take a moment and ask God to remind you now of the truth of who you are. The last thing I'm going to ask you to consider is if there are any rhythms of rest that God might be inviting you to engage in this season. Is there an invitation from him to engage in a regular practice of rest so you can combat this pull of performing? Take some time now to ask God about that.